Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. The sex talk with your son or daughter isn't just a one-time thing. It should be an ongoing conversation. And in 2014, that conversation has nothing to do with birds and bees. Teens are far too savvy these days for that old slideshow on the mechanics of where babies come from. Today's conversation has to include topics ranging from casual hooking up to sexual and gender identity to the value of monogamy. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is back today to explain why a lot of what we've tried to do over the years in teaching our kids about sex just plain doesn't work, and he'll offer some suggestions on what does. He calls it a consent-based approach to sex education. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is a board-certified family psychologist. He writes the weekly Double Take Advice column for teens and parents in the Lawrence Journal World. He's the author of the Dear Dr. Wes series of books for teens and parents and a forthcoming guide to successful living with ADHD that's titled I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not. And Wes, always good to have you here. Welcome back.
And it's always great to be here on a show of great intelligence in talk.
I appreciate that. Well, he's joined by a special panel of guests. Current Double Take teen co-author Kendra Schwartz is back. She's a Lawrence High School senior, and again, she's been with us before. Kendra, good to see you again. Welcome
Thanks
back.
Thanks for having me again.
And with Kendra is her mom, Stacy. Stacy, welcome to you too.
Thanks so much.
Well, Wes, you've brought on a bevy of teens and young adults over the years to talk about sexuality, you know, and other issues too. But I think this is our first family panel. I bet there's an interesting backstory here. Am I right?
Yeah, I've thought about doing something like this in past years. And some teenagers simply do not want to be seen in public with their parents. And so fortunately, or heard in
Kendra's
public.
Kendra's laughing.
Yeah. Kendra is not amongst them. She likes her mom. But we had a really interesting discussion when Kendra first came on the column. We were having lunch and kind of coming up with ideas for the column over the year. And Kendra happened to – we were talking about sex because, of course, that's always a topic in the column. And Kendra shared with me how her family had handled that, and I thought this is a great show because it even pushes my limits a little bit or pushes my ideas a little bit and makes me think more.
Yes. So we're blowing the doors off here today, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I don't want to be too foreboding about it. It's just you'll see as it unfolds sort of why I was curious and interested in how they handled it.
Well, Kendra, Stacy, what has been your approach? Who wants to go first here? Stacy, run.
Well, first of all, my mother had always said to me about sex, if you are in a position to be talking to me about it, it means you're not ready to be doing it.
Oh, that's an interesting thought.
And she always gave me the exact opposite thinking, I suppose, which is as soon as I feel comfortable enough to be talking to her about it, that's when I'm closer to being ready to actually do it.
Hmm. And did that prove to be the case, you think?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, at each point in her development where she'd be ready to talk about any particular topic or have questions, we would talk about that, and we were always very open about it. But we weren't, you know, it's not like we had a big moment of the talk. Never.
Yeah.
I'd have no recollection of anything like that. Do you, Kendra?
It was just an ongoing conversation, mm-hmm. You're saying, Kendra.
Yeah. From such a young age, like I said in the column, from like my first kiss, we were already talking about the steps that may follow that. Obviously, at a very young age, I was not thinking about that, but it was always something that my parents were taking into consideration, and they were thinking of, you know, what would be my next step, and they know that I'm not someone who, I'm very much into monogamy, so they knew that I would be the type of person to be in a relationship with someone for a long time, so they were always very conscientious of that and always thinking of the next step, and they were both talking about the physical aspects of it and the emotional.
You know, just before we get too far away from it, Stacy, to what extent does your approach sort of reflect the changing dynamics from one generation to the next? I mean, the way you and your mom approached it compared to the way you and Kendra approached it, two very different things, it sounds like.
Well, I think a lot of it might be related to media. I think conversations related to sex in my household as a child were inspired by things that popped up where maybe my mother couldn't avoid the topic. Like I remember a teen pregnancy movie of the week where I said to my mom something that made her say, uh-oh, you don't know what you're talking about. They were dancing really close together and I must have said something that made me think maybe that led to the pregnancy. And my mom said, what? Yeah. How do you think? And I was kind of, well, gee, shouldn't it have been her job to meet up? But, you know, so that inspired that conversation. But nowadays, the kind of shows that teenagers watch and preteens even watch are just mind-boggling to me. It makes me feel like I'm 100 years old when I see how explicit they are about so many topics. So if they're going to be exposed to it, I want to be part of those discussions with the kids.
Well, and I think dancing today actually does cause pregnancy.
Does it?
From the way they dance.
The dancing has changed a lot. That is, wow, sadly true.
Yeah. Well, you know, so many parents, you know, Stacey, really struggle with this topic and sort of creating an environment and a culture within their home where you can have a good give and take, an ongoing give and take about this conversation that is more relaxed than sort of sitting down stiffly and having the talk, as you just said, you've never done in your house. So how did you create that in your house that you could sort of have that ongoing give and take?
We're just very – I mean, this. I don't want people to think we're having an orgy in our family room or anything, but we're open about talking about whatever comes up. And so if people have questions, we would talk about them. Even if I can remember as pretty little kids watching Survivor with my daughters. And, you know, there's a lot of kind of sexual suggestive talk even in a show that isn't about sex.
Well, there's a lot of that in that show.
I mean, we weren't seeking out shows about sex, but it seemed to be everywhere. And so as topics would come up, we would discuss what the characters were doing. And, you know, I think that was an opportunity when the girls were really little and still thought that we were pretty smart. that was our
Remember
chance.
Those days?
Yes. Which they may come back again, I've noticed.
No, I still do. I think that's part of it.
Again.
Yeah.
I think there was a period maybe you wouldn't have listened to me that much, but in the earlier days, you would. And that's the time to infuse your values and say, hey, like, these people just met each other on an island and they're already ready to do stuff they shouldn't be doing. So I don't have anything against people having sex before marriage. And I think I made that clear to my kids, but I have a lot against people having sex outside of a relationship.
You know, and I can vouch for
that's the whole basis of Gilligan's Island, by the way. So we'll get back to that later on at this hour.
Yeah. Wow, you're really going back.
Yeah, we're really. Of course, I'm dating myself here.
History.
Yeah,
I will take up for either Stacy or Kendra. I'm not sure which here. When Kendra speaks of her mother behind her mother's back, she does show a great deal of admiration for her mom's views. This is critical because teenagers, of course, we know are going to be defining themselves. We've talked about that on the show before as individuals. Their job is to do teenager things. But what I've also said before is that parents need to be authoritative. They need to be influential. And the best way to be influential is to be the person that your child wants to emulate. We call this referent power. And that's not ever going to work perfectly. I'm sure that Kendra does not want to just become a carbon copy of her mom.
As much as I am, I've found becoming a carbon copy. Everyone
happens,
says
Kendra.
That, but it's not necessarily the goal.
In college, I think that will become less apparent to you. I mean, you will become more your own person. But it's really – this is the key to the sex talk is – and it's why these two are interesting to me. We ought to look at families where – this goes well, and one of the key elements in why it goes well is because Kendra is interested in what her parents think. I was teaching a class out at the Brand Jewish Academy a few months ago, and one of the adults said something so smart in there. He said, I tell my kids I don't want you to grow up and do everything just because I want you to do it. I just want to be a part of that conversation. Mm-hmm. I want you to think about my views as you're developing your own. And I thought that was so on the money. I felt like I'd gone to a class after that was over.
Well, there's that aspect to it, too. And, Kendra, it also sounds like to me that this conversation began, as you've emphasized so many times on this show, Wes, this conversation began very early. It was just a natural part of sort of your upbringing at your house.
Yes. Something I've definitely noticed with some of my peers is they don't get the same respect from their parents that I do. From a very young age, I was always taught by my mom that I have important things to say and that she cares about listening to them and she respects my opinions and my thoughts and actually cares about hearing it. And it's very difficult for parents who never do that to get the respect back from their kids when they get older.
That's
so
interesting. And she did that how?
I think it was just that she trusted me completely. And not that I didn't. I think I always kind of tried to earn her trust as well. But I think just always, she always told me, she never really left out parts of her life to me. She always kind of like shared her world with me, even growing up. Like she told me, I mean, some things I'm sure other parents wouldn't tell their child, but like I always was involved in important decisions with my family. And I think that was a big part of it. And for example, when I moved here in fifth grade, my parents really had me be part of the moving process. And even when we were choosing where we wanted to live, because we, after we moved from California to South Carolina to here, I was always a part of choosing where we're going to live next and choosing the house and choosing what my room would look like. And I think just giving me the responsibility and making me my own person is a really big part of giving me that respect.
That's interesting. You know, Stacey, one of the issues that I'm sure from personal experience that a lot of parents struggle with here is how much of their own experience, their own lives to share with their kids when it comes to sex and when the first time they did X, Y, or Z. How did you approach that? And how did you? What was your philosophy behind that?
Well, I didn't feel like I needed to hide anything. Maybe I'm fortunate I didn't do stuff I needed to hide.
Okay.
So that
I mean, speak on exactly that topic in a second.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I did live with a boyfriend while I was in college, and he was 10 years older than I was. So this, everybody knows this in the family that I did that. I don't think that was a bad thing. And I spoke about how what was important in my development about that relationship is that I was never pushed to do anything before I wanted to do it. He was very respectful of me. I got to have a lot of choice in the matter. And so I always emphasize to my girls, you need to be feeling like you're in the driver's seat when it comes to what step you take at what time, as opposed to saying you shouldn't do anything because that's not realistic. They're going to do something. But I think where people – my experience even back in my generation seemed the friends of mine that were most damaged were the ones where they wound up doing stuff before they wanted to do it, and then they felt guilty and devalued and all the things I wouldn't want my daughters to feel. And I never felt that because I never did anything before I wanted to do it. So I would tell them stories about that I went out on a date with some guy who thought we were going to have sex that night and we had just met. And I thought, what? You are crazy.
What
there's
are you
no,
thinking?
I mean, I basically laughed at him. And then, so I remember, I don't know if you remember me telling this story. I think that's empowering to hear, well, some real person you know.
And I see myself doing the same thing in the future if that ever happened to me. So I think it really was an empowering story.
Yeah.
I don't mean to diminish your stories at all. I appreciate you so much coming on. But am I getting a picture here that we have a very responsible high school student here matched up with a mom who had a fairly positive experiences and did a lot of right things? I'm just wondering about so many families where that wasn't the case, where, you know, mistakes were made and they're painful mistakes. And you sort of wonder how all of that, Wes, plays into this ongoing conversation here.
Well, what Stacey has outlined here very beautifully is really the core of what I call a consent-based sex education. And it means that instead of teaching people how to say no to sex, and I will give you an illustration in a moment why that makes no sense at all, we need to teach kids how to say yes to sex. And a part of saying yes to sex is being able to say no and to respect other people's no. And Stacey gave one good example of that, commonly in Kendra's generation at this point. I think she will agree. Girls are very frustrated when their peer group won't have sex. Their girlfriends aren't having sex because this is deviant from the norm. And sometimes people will pressure, even bully their friends into having sex. I just had one of those examples in the last week or two. And part of a consent-based education is teaching people that you don't need to make anybody have sex, a partner or your friend or anybody else. This is an individual choice, and you have to make that choice authentically and validly. And instead, what we have traditionally done is just say no, just say no. Just say no. Nobody's listening to that. Nobody is interested in that anymore. And so teaching people with some wisdom in saying yes makes them safer, like Stacy described in her own experience.
Kendra, is that right, this culture that Wes is describing about, you know, your peer group in high school, if you haven't had sex yet, you're sort of the odd person out here?
Yes, for a while, actually, especially if you are in a monogamous relationship that's been ongoing. People are constantly wondering, even if they're not pressuring you, they're constantly asking, like, have you done it yet? Have you done it yet?
And they think you're lying if you say no.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of it. And for people who haven't before, even if their friends aren't pressuring them to have sex, society and the media are pressuring them to have sex and to just find someone, get it over with. And I have to agree that, like, we do need to teach people to say yes, but we need to teach them to say yes, but. And sometimes having those conditions, like, people will call you high maintenance, which I've been called before, whatever.
I think I've called you high maintenance.
Yes. No. but part of that is just being respecting yourself enough to say, these are my conditions and this is what I require to stay safe, you know, especially in the society and how it is now.
So it's things have gotten more complicated, Stacy, than when we were kids. Am I getting that here or not?
I think so. I don't remember I don't remember girlfriends pressuring me to. That strikes me as weird. I don't mean to be judgmental of a whole generation, but it's your life.
That wasn't part of my conversation in high school.
I've had kids who will go out and recruit a boy to do it with the girlfriend. Go out and just find a random guy. Yeah, I know. That is an excellent sound effect.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think this thing that I had a case recently, and the young person told me I was free to share this with non-identifying information. This young person was a little younger than Kendra and decided to have sex largely to get it over with. And I said to this person, who's a very smart, gifted, wise young person, I said, is this really what you want to do? And she said, well, I just don't think it's that big a deal. And I knew this was not true.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the point where the therapist or the parent, who could easily be – oh, and the parent was in the same position I was in. The parent and I were conferring about this. And we made the agreement, the parent and I, that our choice was to be supportive with the understanding this was not going to turn out very well. And it didn't turn out very well. And now this person is in a monogamous relationship with someone that she loves quite a bit and is so disappointed in herself.
Mm, mm.
And now we don't have to say anything like, and shouldn't say, I told you so.
Yeah.
That was self-correcting. And just being able to talk about it, and what I've actually said is, I wonder if I should have pressed you harder on this decision. And she said it probably wouldn't have made any difference. So being able to support young people, what would happen if that young person was having this experience with no adults to help them define it and think about it? It wouldn't become any kind of a learning experience. And so we're fortunate that even though that individual feels that was a mistake, she was able to share it with us and get some support for that and learn from it. And that's just a standard story. It's actually a good example. It's a story that comes out in a positive way, I think.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking this morning with Dr. Wes Crenshaw from Lawrence about having to talk with your kids about sex, you know, and how to approach all of that. If you're a parent, how did you approach talking about sex with your kids? And kids, because all of us are kids of someone, how did your parents approach the topic with you? Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. You can email us to uptodate@kcur.org or tweet us at KCUR up to date. We're getting some phone calls now. Let's go to some of them. And Russ from Overland Park. Russ, nice to have you.
Yeah, hello there. Hey, my take is that the sex talk typically is first a matter of undoing whatever lie you told them when they asked when they were a kid. And that's a problem. I mean, when I asked, I was about six, my parents gave me a straight answer. And my daughter asked, she was about six, and they gave her a straight answer. And that, you know, later conversations were therefore peer-to-peer rather than having to undo the damage of, hey, remember what I told you about Santa Claus bringing babies? You know, not so much. It helps.
I agree with you completely.
Further, I also told her, you know, if you decide you are going to do this, let me know. I will be somewhere else, and you can have the house. That way you have a home turf advantage. You do not feel pressured If she, talked about a boy saying, if you tell him no, he can die and all that. We were able to have frank conversations about the Bravo Sierra out there, and it helped immensely. The only piece of advice I'll give that I did not get a chance to give my parents is, if you're six and ask the question and then they give you a straight answer, they should admonish you. Your fellow students will not honor you for this knowledge.
Russ, hang on the phone for a moment, because Kendra and Stacy, when you talked about getting the house, were both nodding their heads. Stacy, you were nodding your head. Why?
I think if you're open enough about the fact that sex is going to be happening, then you can help to structure it in a way where it gets done safely and people don't sneak off and, be in a dangerous place where they're doing it. Also, and I mean
like in the rocks up north of Stillwater where I grew up and everywhere else, yeah.
My, okay. Some self-disclosure there.
Everyone can think of their own place, I guess. I think the house seems like a safer place, and I also think if you're talking about it, then you can set up systems of safety related to birth control. And
absolutely. You treat her like a person who believes that she's going to think for herself. Typically, she will. Kids are small people, and, pretending their genitals aren't real doesn't help. My daughter never actually took me up on that. She waited until she moved out and was in her own place, but she had that option, and because of that, she felt a lot more confident.
I think this is...
Thanks, Russ. That's a good call.
Appreciate very good call, Russ. And this is what pushes me right to my limit, and I'll tell you why, is I think a lot of parents, it's asking a lot of them to condone versus accept sexual conduct with their kids. Now, that was the discussion Kendra and I had that got me really thinking. And I think where my advice to parents is that if you have a child who is in a relationship with someone you really approve of, and Kendra's guy is pretty neat. We had him on the show last August.
Mm-hmm.
It seems within the realm of wisdom to support that monogamous relationship. And if the kids are wanting to have that be sexual and you feel that their judgment is adequate in making that decision, whether you agree with it or not, if you think their judgment is reasonable, then supporting that the way that these parents are supporting it is probably okay.
Yeah, there are folks listening to this, Wes, who are saying, you're condoning something
right.
That shouldn't be condoned yet. I can just hear them talking to the radios right now.
That's where my discomfort kicks in. However, I think the way I just described it, you're better off being supportive than you are being oppositional. Now, I don't think everyone has to sign on to that. If that's beyond a parent's comfort level, they shouldn't feel guilty about that. Where this goes down the tubes, and I've seen it many times, is the parent that kind of starts letting their 16 or 17-year-old have random hookups at the house. And I don't think that's supporting any kind of wise decision. They can go to the rocks up above wherever it was you're describing. I think that's where one has to draw the line. For sure, is if the behavior is not very self-enhancing, the parent really shouldn't support it. And I understand people who are uncomfortable supporting that in any way. Kids really aren't ready for sex emotionally. Sorry, Kendra. But that doesn't stop any of them. It doesn't stop them. And so for us to be a part of that conversation is the safer alternative.
And again, a lot of parents will think that by condoning, this thing's going to get out of control very, very quickly, Wes. And how do you keep that genie somewhat in the bottle once you start down that road?
I think you sit down and say, the only reason I'm willing to do this is because I support you and your partner. And I see you as a legitimate couple. And as long as I see it that way, I feel okay being supportive of it. I'm not interested in you and your next boyfriend after a week of dating. You want to have a sleepover. I don't see that as okay. And if you're asking me to provide shelter for this, I'm going to get to have more input into it than I would if you had your own apartment.
Yeah.
You define that part up front.
Let's do this. Let's invite more parents to call in here. We have a couple, Michael and Nick, calling right now. And by all means, if you have had a successful relationship with a son or daughter along these lines, or maybe not, we'd like to hear how you've managed all that. 816-235-2888, our email address, update@kcur.org. Let's grab one more phone call before a break here. Let's go to Nick from Parkville. Nick, welcome to UpToDate.
Thank you very much. Thank you for taking the call. I am really encouraged by all the comments that have been made so far. I'm 72 years old. I've raised four kids. They all have pretty positive outlooks on sex. We were very open and got them to look at sex as just another part of life, but something that you have to take responsibility for.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's a relatively private, intimate type of thing, and can become more and more powerful the longer you engage in it.
How, that is so beautifully put, I just want to say.
Okay. From an early age, I lived in a very repressive household. My parents never talked about sex. I never had the, quote, talk until I was 20 years old, and I had, of course, learned about sex when I was 10 out on the schoolyard.
Yeah.
I've been married and divorced once and remarried the second time, two kids with each family. Both of my wives had similar sorts of upbringing, so we decided to be much more open with our kids. We did not dress or cover ourselves up going to and from the bathroom. They got used to the human body. In Europe, of course, there's nude beaches, and they got to see people other than us and other kids their own age. And they came to accept the human body as something that's to be appreciated, that's beautiful, and has marvelous functions that you learn about more and more as you go along. We always emphasize the responsibility thing, and even though some kids can enter into marriage or relationships early on, 16, 17 years old, we've always felt that you need to be a more mature than that. I was a virgin until I was 22. That was too late, but 16 or 17 is probably too early. But each kid is different, and we have to talk to them, as Kinder said, you know, as real people. From a very early age, from 4 or 5, the talk needs to begin. If you wait until they're teenagers, you are way, way behind the eight ball. And what is on the internet now in terms of all types of sexual relations, your kids will get into no later than sixth grade.
Yeah. Nick, I'm glad you called. Thank you. Good phone call. Appreciate it. Again, our number 816-235-2888. If you can share your story about how you taught your kids about sex, maybe in a positive way, or if it didn't work out, we're interested in hearing your stories. 816-235-2888. When we come back from a break, we'll continue this conversation and we'll talk to Wes about why he's not a big fan of traditional sex education. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed our conversation about food flavorings in Kansas City's Underground Supper Club, you can find those at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, how do you accept the idea of death when you know it's just around the corner? We'll talk with a surgeon who has stage 4 cancer and who's building his own coffin about his journey. This hour, we're talking about the talk and how to have the talk with your kids about sex and bring them along in ways that you hope are positive. We're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. He's a board-certified family psychologist from Lawrence. He's joined by his current Double Take teen co-author, Kendra Schwartz, who's a Lawrence High School senior. And she brought along her mother, Stacy, as well today. 816-235-2888. We have lots of good phone calls here from Michael, Greg, and Wayne. We're going to get those calls in just in a moment. I just want to point out they're all men, and by all means, if a woman wants to call and share her story, we're open to that side of the ledger here, too, at 816-235-2888. You know, Wes, you have said that abstinence-based sex education is so out of step with reality that it puts teens at risk. And you mean what by that?
Well, I will give you the best analogy I can. So everybody knows what the DARE program is because you see all those T-shirts. And for those of us who actually talk to teenagers and find out what's going on in their world, what we know about DARE is two things. One, it has been an excellent program to teach kids how to use drugs. It gives you all this detail about drugs, and then you know exactly how to use them. And the second thing that it does is it essentially equates marijuana with all other drugs. And anybody who knows me knows I wish prohibition had worked. I am so not into substance abuse. But I have learned over the years that you cannot equate marijuana even with alcohol. Alcohol use creates more problems in our society than marijuana use. And so kids have figured this out, and what they have done is to discount everything we teach them about drug use because they don't believe our propaganda anymore. Hmm. And so they go create their own, now the propaganda that teenagers have is that, you know, marijuana is like this sacred element of our existence, and, you know, we need to smoke it all the time, and what's wrong with the adults that they don't want to do this, and it's a conspiracy, and it's all sorts of propaganda. This is the same, and I don't even want to start that conversation. We'll do that on another show,
yeah.
Using it only as an analogy. So this is how it is with sex. When we tell people, you know, we scare them, you're going to get pregnant and you're going to get a disease, which are all legitimate risks, but they perceive this as just a load of bunk, mm-hmm. that we are trying to get them not to have sex. So then they go and do it on the sly and say, we don't believe anything you're telling us. We need to be influential with kids, and in order to do that, our message has to be pure. It has to be truthful. It has to be based in some reality and sold as in the spirit of helping them, not in controlling and being overbearing.
You mean what? Take me one more step. You mean what exactly with that?
Well, this idea that if you tell people to tell a teenager you need to wait to have sex till you're married. There is a tiny percentage of people that do that. And those people tend to be extremely devoted to a religious code. And if you are in that group, that is okay. I am not saying abstinence is a bad thing. I'm saying relying on an abstinence-based education, when the vast, vast, vast majority of people will not use marriage as their pathway to sexual expression, is unrealistic, and kids know that, and so they won't respond. If you say, well, wait till you're with someone you love, that's the one I used to use. I was down with that. They're not necessarily going to hear that. It's good to use that as an aspiration, but they have to not feel shamed if they make mistakes along the way, like the example I gave earlier.
Yeah.
So we're really trying to be in a healthy dialogue with young people and not be so high-handed and looking like we're holier than thou.
Having the talk with your kids about sex is our topic today. Let's go back to some phone calls here. And Michael from Lawrence. Michael, you're on Up Today. Good morning.
Well, thank you very much, and good morning. I want to very quickly comment on the good doctor's point about being truthfulness. He's absolutely right. You cannot lie to kids. They see right through it in a minute. And then the previous caller before that, I'd like to think that we were fortunate enough to be as sensible as he was in raising his children. We had twins, a boy and a girl, and we gave them the kind of information we felt they were ready for based on how they asked us. By the age of 12, my daughter really wanted to know about sex, and we felt it was time to give the whole straight skinny. And we sat her down with her twin brother and with a picture book and started discussing the whole thing, exactly how it happened scientifically. And my boy jumped up and ran away with his hands over his ears. And my daughter said, it's just sex. And he says, I don't want to know about it. Yeah. So I have to do it.
You know,
I can relate to some of that, Michael.
Do you remember when we did the show with the three young women talking about sex and somebody called in and said, why are there no guys? And the girl said we couldn't find any that would talk about it.
Right. I remember. Yeah, well, and it's a different in the development and maturity of between boys and girls. And I think that it's the same thing in relation to marijuana. You cannot lie to kids. We lied to them about sex and marijuana for years, and it's come back to bite us terribly. As a result, my kids are adults, and they entered into sexual relationships later in life, meaning their early 20s, and were very responsible about it. I'm just proud as I could be with them in regard to their sex, okay? But it was being honest.
Yeah. Michael, I'm glad you called. Thank you. I guess that raises a point. Michael raises a very good point about differences in the ability to sort of hear the message between girls and boys. And we're talking girls and boys at age 12 and 13. There's a difference, Wes.
Yeah, boys are finally catching up. It's interesting. Girls will come see me, and the greatest compliment I ever got was this teenage girl. She says, I just can't believe that I talk to you about all these things. And I'm like, oh, yeah? She goes, I don't even think of you as a guy or a girl. I just think of you as an it. And I thought that was
cousin
such,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Wes Crenshaw's cousin it. Yeah, there you go.
And I thought that was so nice because it was saying, I'm comfortable with you.
Mm-hmm.
But recently, guys have slowly started to catch up, and they will now come in and talk about sex. Girls love to talk about sex. They talk intelligently about it. They're seeking different issues with it than I think guys are. But little by little, guys are starting to think it's okay to talk about it. Maybe we're becoming more enlightened now.
Yeah. Having to talk with your kids about sex is our topic here. Let's go to Greg from Gladstone. Greg, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hi.
Yes, I had a question. My mom introduced me to the sex talk way early, like in my kindergarten year. And I just wanted to know, is there a certain time when you should start easing your kids into that sex talk? Because I know you guys were talking about how you're supposed to sort of lead into that and sort of discuss it as it goes on. But is there a time when you should and when you should not?
Stacey, how did you do it in your family?
I'm just trying to recover from the idea of a little kindergarten kid hearing everything about sex.
Yeah.
That seems terrifying. It really seems like it was piece by piece. Maybe Kendra remembers better.
Do you remember how you began and what age Kendra was?
We never had a straight talk, but I think that we started having that sort of conversation back in fifth grade because that's when the school was starting to talk about, like, the different body parts, I suppose. And obviously, there's a certain stigma with that. So even when they weren't giving the sex talk yet, and she was definitely not giving the full talk, I think we were always just having conversations about relationships. And I got the idea in my head that monogamy was really important. And I did have a time in my life where I thought I'd wait till marriage, but that was my choice. That was never something she implanted in my brain. That was always something that we had a conversation about. And I was always thinking, and she's like, your mind might change. And I think that's all you can really say, that this is how it is, but it can change every year.
It's critically important to understand that the sex talk doesn't have to be about penises and vaginas. It can be about boys and girls and love and how do we treat one another. Mm-hmm. And just to give you an example, Alex, my son, is now 10, and probably 2 or 3 years ago, he and I were on the way to Minneapolis, and we were going to go to the Minneapolis St. Paul Science Museum, Minnesota Science Museum, which is excellent. And on the way, I had to start taking a testosterone supplement, and you have to keep that away from kids. And I explained to him why, because it could induce early puberty. Well, that was interesting. And all Alex was interested in from that point on in the trip was discussing the ins and outs of puberty. So we get up there, and they had the Body Worlds exhibit, which is the cadavers that are placentized. And they had a huge thing about puberty. What luck.
Oh, boy.
We were in there for 4 hours.
No kidding.
Yeah, and he was 7. And we were going through this, and he got to see every piece of the anatomy there is, and there was a huge display.
From 14 different angles, too.
Exactly right. And that was the teachable moment. And the moral of that story is you don't know when it's going to come. But I didn't say, don't touch that because your hair might fall out or something. I explained it. That caused him to ask a question. I answered it. Just had a good dialogue. And I got to say, 4 hours in Body Worlds was about enough for me. But we really covered the subject. And we also then, on that same trip, were talking about how different couples interacted with each other. And did that couple look like they were having a good time together? Or did somebody look like they were about to break up? And all of those things. And just teaching him what relationships are about. That's just one example.
Greg, is that getting you around the corner there?
I'm sorry, what?
Is that getting you around the corner?
Yes. My mother went through the whole scientifics of it. We didn't really get into the emotional point of it until I was like 10 or 11. So that makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
I'm glad you called. Thanks. Let's go to Lisa from Prairie Village, who's breaking the male logjam here. Lisa, I'm sure glad you called. Thank you.
Well, glad to step in. Thank you. Although I am calling, I do have a boy. But and I agree with what Wes just said about sort of opening up and waiting for the right moment. And my comment was around sex ed curriculum, because I found that even though I agree with Wes about, in general, about curriculum in schools, And I'm very frustrated lately by the response to our particular district about some things that happened and legislation going on in Topeka today. But I always review all the sex ed stuff that my kids are learning because I feel like they're not learning enough from it, and so I want to know what they're missing so I can fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
But I also found that it opened up a conversation for my son and I one day because I was kind of talking to him about what they were learning in school, and he asked sort of a generic question that clearly he had just gotten some very bad misinformation about HIV and AIDS. And it opened up a great, incredible conversation that went on much longer than I anticipated. And like I said, it wasn't anything I sat down and planned to have, so luckily I knew what I was talking about. But discussing the curriculum led us into that conversation rather than me sitting down with him and saying, okay, today let's talk about what you've learned about HIV/AIDS.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I think knowing that they're hearing about it in other places, like in school, can lead you into, quote-unquote, the talk. And, of course, I'm sure you've said this today, but it should never, you know, in my head it's never one talk and then you're done for
right.
the rest of their adolescence. So that's where I would say the sex ed is good. And I encourage parents. Parents can always access that information and see what their kids are learning before it gets, you know, posted on viral news
yeah.
stories.
All right, Lisa, I'm sure glad you called. Thanks very much. Kendra, did you want to hop in here?
Yes. I just want to say I think the sex education that I have received in school is absolutely horrible.
Because?
We would have days where, and I think this idea is great, that we had a box in the room and students could put in questions they had about sex, and then we'd all sit down in sort of a semicircle and have this conversation. Great idea. Terribly executed.
Because?
Because we asked the questions and the teacher could not answer them or refused
not
to.
A good thing. Yeah.
His answers were either vague or incorrect, and the students who had like older sisters or parents who were having a good conversation with their kids about sex, they knew these answers were wrong, and so they had to be the ones educating the kids, and that's not how it should work at all.
Ouch.
Part
Ouch.
Of the problem, and I'm not trying to defend this situation because I completely agree with you, Kendra, and we've talked about it many times, but the part of the problem is if you don't sit down and talk to teenagers for 30 hours a week, every week, you don't see the changes in the culture. This, you know how much we talk on this show about how things have changed. Even in the last 2 years of doing these shows, I've begun to have different views about sexuality among teenagers as the situation develops. And a classic example of what Kendra's talking about is there was recently at a different high school I know of, a group like she's talking about, and the adult was doing like a role play where they were pretending to be the boy, and the boy's like, oh, I love you, I love you, I promise to love you, and all this stuff. And then they asked everybody, well, how many of you girls believe him? Well, and the girls were just like staring at him like, what are you – this isn't even relevant because no boy has to tell a girl he loves her to have sex with her anymore. Now, there are some girls who won't do it without that, but there's plenty of other girls who that's not part of the barter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're in this sort of like weird, surreal existence where something that would have worked in 1987 – doesn't work anymore. And if you're not really up to speed and constantly in a dialogue with teenagers, you don't see that. And that's where parents can be and teachers and schools cannot.
Yeah. Well, it is a challenge, though. As a parents of two teens myself, it is a very big challenge. Let's go to some more phone calls here. We're talking today about the talk, how to have the talk about sex with your kids. What's the right way to do it? Wayne from Mission on the Kansas side. Wayne, good morning.
Good morning. And thanks for the conversation. I think you guys are probably a couple days too late for me because I had this conversation with my son over the weekend, and we've been talking about sex since he's in sixth grade, and we've been talking about sex since he was in fifth grade when they introduced the curriculum to him.
Right.
And I wanted to introduce him to a condom. And so this weekend I just casually got a condom and I threw it on the table, and he looked at it, and he said, he was startled, and I said, do you know what that is? He said, yeah, Dad, I know that. That's a condom. I said, well, what do you know about a condom? Well, I've seen them on the ground, on the street. I've seen them on TV.
Good call, yeah.
And I said, okay. So So I asked him to take the condom and put it in his hand. He was aghast. Oh, I don't want to hold it. But I said, this is a condom, and we talked about what condoms are for. I mean, we talked about, he says, Dad, I'm not going to be having sex anytime soon. But I wanted him to know that, yes, maybe you're not. I'm glad you're not going to have sex anytime soon. But this is life, son.
Right.
I mean, condoms are hopefully going to be a part of your life.
It's so critical with boys to do that, because as much – I have a different conversation with girls and boys about this issue because they have different experiences of what it would mean to be pregnant. And I always tell guys, do not – it sounds so mean. Kendra, you can hit me if you think I deserve it. I just say don't trust any girl's reliance on birth control, because some are religious about it, and some have very good systems, industrial-grade contraception systems, and some forget to take the pill every 3 or 4 days. And your young man, if he will follow your wisdom, as I bet he will ultimately, will be a whole lot safer. I call this packing your own parachute.
Yeah.
And you know that term.
Yeah. I'm glad you called, Mike. Thanks. Or Wayne, thanks. I appreciate the phone call, Wayne.
Kendra didn't hit me either.
Yeah.
I have to agree. I think that I've seen that happen so many times. I know so many of my friends will be out doing something busy, and they have a problem with taking the pill. And I think a big part of that is that, first of all, in the United States, my mom and I were talking about this, everyone takes the pill. But in other countries, like in Europe, everyone's taking IUDs. And I think IUDs are something where you don't have to remember it. So I think it's just having that conversation in addition to the sex talk, having the birth control talk, and having that with the girls and the guys, and talking about what are your options, because there's so many different options. And I never got that education in school, and so I've had to do a lot of research on my own. And I think that's something they should be providing in school, because that's how people are going to stay safe.
Stacey, I want to ask you about how you and Kendra had that conversation about contraception. I also want to get our phone number out in case someone has a last-minute question. 816-235-2888. Go ahead, Stacey.
We did some research on the Internet about different options, and then we went to the doctor, and we spent quite a long time. I want to say she gave us a good half hour with a nurse practitioner talking about all the options, and it was really an education for me, because there's a different way of thinking about it now compared to when I was looking at options. So if I would have just gone with my gut, that wouldn't have been a good strategy.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll probably do a show on that next year. I'm getting my certification as a sex therapist and sex educator later this year. And we'll probably do a show and talk about that, because there's ins and outs of all of those different methods.
Mike from Kansas City, Missouri. Mike, you're on the show. Good morning.
I've been on hold for a while. So, anyways, here's my thing. I've been around a lot of jerk guys.
Right.
That are my friends. And pardon me. And their point is, they're probably, their situation as far as giving the sex talk to their son is to challenge him and saying, are you out there doing this and doing that? And,
like a threat, kind of.
The dad is the big lover, and certain kids, the kids are embarrassed by what they hear. Do you get any sense of what I'm talking about?
I think I misunderstood. You're saying they sort of brag about it?
And sort of challenge their sons, I think.
They want them, you better get out there and start doing this,
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
That's not any better than than threatening them. One of the things that needs to always be a part of every conversation in a consent-based sex education is ethics. How should we treat each other? And if you ask my kid what will happen to him if he mistreats his dating partner in the future, he'll do the cutthroat signal.
Mm-hmm.
He will be sitting on the couch with me for his entire high school. Because treating people ethically, teaching your kids to treat people ethically is more important than anything, putting their clothes away or washing the dishes or anything.
Let's go to Janet from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Yes. Well, my comment and question is that my kids are all grown now, but when they went to school, they showed them this film of fifth grade. They showed the boys a film about boys and the girls a film about girls.
Right.
And then a male person would talk with the boys, and a female person, an adult, you know, counselor, would talk with the girls. And my request was that they consider, they could do a separate film and talk separately, but that they have a time when they show them both a film, and that then they model, the adult male and the adult female model a conversation.
Yeah.
Because they are, the young kids, especially the boys, are not wanting to talk about it, and they don't know how, and they haven't seen that. So I just wonder what the thinking is about that. If that's happening in the
right.
schools now.
Janet, thank you. Go ahead quickly, Wes. Just a few seconds left here.
I think that's a great way to do things, but it takes I just have to be honest. I do not think schools can ever get to the point where those kind of courageous conversations can be had. There are too many people with different and diverse views. I respect those views. I don't know that I want to trust my child's sex education to the school. I just didn't do that myself. So it's good if there's information, but, you know, it's important to try to do it at home.
Well, I want to thank Kendra Schwartz and Stacy for coming in and sharing your stories today. Great conversation. I'm sure appreciate you guys taking the time to do it very much. And Dr. Wes Crenshaw, always a pleasure.
It is fun to be here. I will be out at the PTA with Shawnee Mission East High School on the 3rd at 10 o'clock in the morning for people who'd like to come out. It's an open program.
Okay. Sorry we couldn't get to all our phone calls. Emily, Janet, Aaron this morning. Tomorrow on the show, how do you accept the idea of death when you know it's just around the corner? We'll talk with a surgeon who has stage 4 cancer about his journey. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, Beth Lipoff, and Cody Newell. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.